anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course he would. That's a particularly stupid question. If they are a show, of course we want to play at the weekend.
Hello, Golf Weekly friends. It's the week after the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open. It was a great success. Russell Knox ultimately prevailed in what was a thrilling back nine. We're going to look back on that. We have the Scottish Open this week. And then, of course, the 148th Open is on next week at Carnoustie. So it's one of those beautiful, sweet spots in the golfing calendar. In studio, Nathan Murphy has returned from Ballyliffin. Just got in the last half hour, Nathan.
Hey!
And plus five is in the house. Connor Deegan back with us. Hello, Connor.
Hello, boys. How are we?
How you doing?
I'm doing very well.
Did you watch much of the Irish Open from afar?
Pretty much most of it, to be honest.
I must say, haven't even got to walk the course, and we both walked the course, Nathan, and even played it. It looked even better on television than in person, I would say. The aerial shots were fantastic.
Phenomenal.
Because when you're there and you're standing on the fairways or on the ropes looking around, it feels just fairly flat. Mm. There's no outstanding views unless you're up very high on that 14th hole. So actually the aerial shots brought the thing to life in a way that being on the course where it's very flat doesn't quite do the same way. That was my feeling.
Well, that's, I suppose, personally, very nice of you to give me the invite to go up, but it's very, very difficult to go up and watch golf. Number one, it's in the back end of nowhere. Hard to get in and out of, in my opinion.
Well, that's a fact.
Okay. Well, thankfully. And when you go to watch it, I mean, you don't see that much golf, really. You see boys hitting it. You go to the practice ground, it's great. But other than that...
Interestingly, uh-huh. And I don't quite know why, because the attendance numbers were high. But we were shocked because Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I wasn't out much on Sunday. But for those 3 days, it was the first time I've been at an Irish Open. I've been going since maybe 2011 territory, where you could actually follow the marquee groups outside the ropes. You could walk with them.
Yeah.
It wasn't one, two, three deep. Mm. You were just, I remember I walked basically outside the ropes with the John Rahm, GMAC, Cabrera Bello group on the back nine for about six or seven holes on the Saturday, Nathan. And, okay, I was inside the ropes, I had the red band, but my view was
pretended
exactly...
you were near the ropes.
Yeah, I was near the ropes.
Not as the people, but just don't touch me.
Yeah, not quite, man.
Not with them. Yeah. No.
But it was the same faces walking along with me. Actually, and I can't explain that.
No, I thought it was the most enjoyable Irish Open to watch golf at. Mm. Because even comparing it to Royal County Down and to Port Stewart last year, which are two... aesthetically pleasing courses, and you would think similar that the shots would look brilliant. There was something about Ballyliffin, it was just a step above again. Maybe it was the weather was far better than we've previously seen as an Irish Open, but it was a very chilled atmosphere up there as well. It didn't feel like you were ever in a rush. You could just get out, you could stand. As first time I noticed it was when Rory was heading to, I just met up with G on the 9th, and he'd followed him for a couple of holes, and I just walked straight up to the back of the 9th green, up to the ropes.
And there it was.
And there he was.
Yeah.
Missing a putt.
Which has not been the case at previous Irish Opens around the marquee groups.
No, he's missed a lot of putts at Irish Opens.
Hey.
I knew that was good.
At Golf Weekly, OTB is where you can get us. We'll get to your tweets first, then we'll talk more Irish Opens. So, Victoria Tediora was at the Irish Open again. Flew over. Where's she?
Staying in Derry.
Derry, right.
Taxiing it in and out every day.
Whew. Had a great time at the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open. Looking forward to next year. I'm sure Paul McGinley will create another innovative template for the great old game. Hashtag friend of the pod. I didn't meet Victoria. You were talking to her?
I did. Victoria was part of our show on Friday night. And I went down yet again, Joe, and met the great unwashed.
Oof.
And escorted them to the clubhouse. Where you were getting very angry when we walked in. It was almost an embarrassing situation. I was like, Joe's usually very calm. It's fine.
What was wrong with him?
Just get stressed before you know the big moments. But McGinley's in town. He wants to make sure everything is
In short, Connor, we had arranged to have this area in the bar that was going to be partitioned off. And then we got there. And this is after, like, a couple of members of staff have gone up and wrecked the place weeks in advance. We've had conversations with people. It's going to be partitioned. And then we get up there and it's just a wall of noise because everybody on the far side clearly can't even see us. They're just chatting. And it's, like, way too much noise. And we asked them to partition it as agreed, and they're like, no, we can't, we have to walk him down with food. We're going to drag McGinley up and have him talk.
Belgium, Brazil is on the TVs at the same time.
You're going to invite people up. Dylan Fratelli came, the golfer, as well. So you're going to have them talk and nobody in the room can hear them?
Yeah, it wouldn't be good.
I wouldn't say I lost my temper,
Oof. Were you irate?
No, I wasn't irate, but I was like, this is unacceptable. This is not happening. We are not doing this.
Well, you see, he's bringing it to a level of professionalism that maybe you need to step up
to. Well, there
to,
is that.
You know.
Set your own standards, Murphy. You've got to set standards. And eventually...
See, this is why it works well. I'm a people person. I went down. I shook the hands.
And he's a hit.
Made everybody feel at home.
He's a hateful shade.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
I literally made sure we called the European Tour, got them into the building, and they had words with the bar manager, who was still not happy, even with the European Tour people telling her this has to happen. And eventually it was done. Hey, and guess what? The world didn't end. People still got their food, and McGinley actually was audible.
Okay.
So, look, I stand by it. I'm a very laid-back person, except in work. I'll admit, in work, I can be a little bit stressy. How would this become about me? Who are you? I'm on the couch here.
Oh. You should bring some of that nice Joe into the office sometime.
I do plenty of the time, all right? Lenny Clark, start him early. He has a little picture of his son with a golf club. So Lenny's forcing his child to...
A pension plan, yeah. Good lad, Lenny.
What's the general attitude to children at the driving range? I'm thinking of bringing my six-year-old who has a low concentration level.
Like all six-year-olds?
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
But am I going to be getting filthy looks?
Not from me. I love to see... I'm more than happy to see kids there. I think now 8 o'clock on a midweek evening mightn't be the best time.
He should be in bed. He's six.
But I think if you go there at midday of a weekday or a low peak time, I think it's kind of cute. You see a dad with their kid hitting some balls.
And it's all right if I send him over to somebody who's better at golf than me. Watch him for a while.
It's an interesting question. That's just me. Maybe a lot of people find it annoying.
I couldn't care less.
Yeah, I couldn't care less.
I think it's good for kids. And I think look, let's be blunt. It is good for them. It's good for the relationship. All that good stuff. Normally it's best if you take them to an end bay.
Yeah.
But there's two reasons. Number one, you have a wall on one side, so he's not able to go both ways. He can only go one way, so he's easier to keep an eye on.
I always just worry a kid's going to run into a bay and get a club in the head.
Well, that's the big issue.
Constant fear.
So you need to know, is your six-year-old able to handle it?
A whack of a club?
The responsibility of, if you tell him you can't go in there, you'll get hurt.
You're going to get badly hurt.
Is he going to take that advice?
Okay, are you going to be selfish are just going to be selfless and go and let the child play golf himself and you watch him and praise him rather than you try to hit shots?
Absolutely not. He's not going to do that.
I know that. I know. I'm just asking the question.
Come on.
Who does that?
A lot of driving
I've read Tiger Woods' book. There's learnings in that.
A lot of driving ranges have very nice short game areas. Should you not, if you really care about your six-year-old, work on your short game and frankly...
It needs a lot of work.
And also have him practicing his putts and his chipping. Because actually, a six-year-old might prefer to be doing a few chips and putting the ball in the hole, which is the point of the game. Is that not a fair solution?
That is an excellent, excellent idea.
Bring him up to Luttrellstown, beautiful short game area.
Yeah. There's two trains of thought. Yeah. Do you teach from the hole backwards or from the tee forwards?
They say you're meant to teach from the hole backwards. That's what Dan...
Earl Woods taught.
Hit hard. Find it.
Hit hard.
Yeah. The Dan plan... The guy who left his... We've got to check in with him. He's on about 8,000 hours now. The guy who left... He left his job everything to try and make it as a pro. His coaching, he sought all the best advice and it was... He started off with 2 foot putts and worked his way back. That was the best advice to start from the hole.
If it was me starting again...
How did you learn to play golf?
Oh, stand up, hit it and walk and hit it and walk. And
actually, do that. Golf. Whatever he did, do that.
No, I would start...
What age were you?
Oh, sorry, I grew up on the course.
Deegan's one of these kids whose mother dropped him off at 6 a.m. and said, I'll see you for dinner.
That's pretty much it. No, we walked to it. We didn't get dropped off. You brought a packed lunch with you.
That sounds like magical times. My dad played tennis, so we would do that at the tennis club.
No.
Go cycle up in the morning.
We started at half seven.
And just play all day and come home. I'd wish it had been the golf club.
54 holes a day.
Yeah, no, I'd believe it.
And half seven, then you had your lunch. Well, whatever. You got round.
I'd say you were trying all sorts of mad shots and flop shots and just...
Great crack. Get into the bunker and put two balls side by side. You ever do that one?
No.
Okay. Put one ball here and one ball right behind it, touching it out of the bunker.
Both of them.
And hit them as hard as you can. And we just see the backspin you get on it.
Is your six-year-old showing an aptitude or an interest?
No. I'm just thinking it means I can go to the golf course. But also I'm thinking when they're 12, 13 and they... may get into it.
Yeah.
You want them to have some sort of the basics.
You can see people who played as kids in their swing. There is just
a freedom.
That touch of freedom and natural, that kind of natural free flowing thing that we don't have.
And also, I have another child on the way very soon.
It's a bit early.
So I'm thinking it's a perfect opportunity for me to get out of the house for 2-3 hours and bring the other lads with me. Mm. So everyone wins.
Everyone's a winner.
The other lads?
Two. six and five.
Oh,
I don't know if I'm bringing two. That's a five-year-old.
Well, you're struggling with a six-year-old, so the five-year-old's a complete lunatic then, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Short game.
Tweet in, let us know how you feel about kids at the driving range. Mick Arlachenko.
I live right beside the Grange, so do you think would they appreciate if I just rocked up with the six-year-old and five-year-old?
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
they would problem,
love that.
Sure.
Love that. Are you good folk packing the bags again, heading to Carnoustie next week? Hashtag friend of the pod, hashtag the open. We are not. Ryder Cup, though, is on the cards. We're going there. Alistair McGarrity. Anyone know what's happened to...
We are.
Off the ball staff are going, yeah. Anyone know what's happened to Victor Dubuisson?
No.
Where is he in the world now?
I know you asked me to research this earlier.
And you didn't.
Come back.
Okay. We'll check the ranking of Victor. I can't remember the last time I saw him.
Can't. No. Doesn't.
Is he playing PGA Tour or European Tour?
I thought I saw him recently enough on the European Tour.
Okay, we'll come back to you and check on that. Colin Farrington. What is he?
28.
In the world?
No, he's age is 28.
Not 28 in the world. Colin Farrington just bought this fella, the Tiger Woods book. Can't wait. Also played Killeen Castle Friday, amazing course, hashtag friend of the pod. Ah, Killeen.
He's only played once this year, Victor Dubuisson. Mm-hmm. Missed the cut at the Spanish Open.
That's very worrying. There's something gone wrong there, isn't there?
It was very
clear he had issues.
Oh, there's no doubt. Yeah,
he's getting on the wrong side of them just now. That's a pity. Killeen Castle, an amazing course. I must go back to Killeen someday soon.
Great track.
It's just a fantastic course. Adrian Cahir. A bit late here, but on Rory's putting last Thursday, did you notice he missed everything left lip? His pace was good, seemed like he was nearly trying to fade everything in, or just simple misreads. Adrian, we'll come back to that point. Ian Kane had the Tiger Woods book in his hand. Have been saving this until I got to Maui. Hashtag friend of the pod, hashtag honeymoon.
God. You have more to do than to read the book, I would say, Adrian.
His name's Ian.
Sorry, Ian.
Hope Adrian's not there. Enda Kilgallen says, the only thing more beautiful than the Donegal scenery watching the Irish Open was Van Rooyen's swing. The kind of thing you wish was waiting at home for you on a cold winter evening. He did have it like a textbook swing, Eric Van Rooyen. Obviously blew the tournament, but...
very good swing.
Beautiful looking thing.
Very, very, very good swing.
Interestingly, I saw him on the Saturday night, 8 o'clock, still at the range with his coach. And I thought, get out of here. Go home, watch some football, or put your feet up, or have some grub. And he was really grinding.
You're not having a
routine? Maybe, but... I don't know. It just seemed like he was actually working on things with his coach.
Overdoing it.
A little bit.
But totally understandable. I mean, he's gone out there to try. I think he's won on the Challenge Tour. I think he's won once. He came second and another on the Challenge Tour. It's a big thing to stand up and win your first tournament.
Kieran O'Dea pointed out, good Irish Open, but the last two groups were two holes behind. Should have been on the shot clock. And Warren just goes to show Tour afraid to take action against slow play. Certainly on a Sunday, the last group is never going to be penalised.
No, and they were being watched. The referee was walking with him.
Was he?
Yeah.
Wesley Ruddle feeling very happy. He's a picture of the May monthly medal at Buncloudy Golf Club. It's good to see one of the friends of the pod winning the monthly medal. Did you ever win anything in your career? Did you?
On the golf course?
Yeah.
I won an open competition a couple of times.
Okay.
Castle Knock, I think 2 weeks in a row.
That's all right. What were you playing off then?
18.
Jonathan Ruddy, I can't wait for the review of Rory's pudding. Yeah, we're not going to do too much in that, are we?
I presume you wanted us to ask, have you won anything, Joe?
No. I didn't want you to ask that. I have won a few things last year.
Okay.
Yeah. David Horahan, got to be worried for Rory's putting for the Ryder Cup. Will be interesting to see how the team captain plays him if he's still out of form with the flak stick. That's a fair point, because the Ryder Cup, above all tournaments, is just a putting competition. So we'll come back to that. But then again, you want to stay on the right side of Rory McIlroy, don't you? Gavin McAllister, the curtain has been lifted. He's got a picture of us doing the show on Friday with Paul McGinley. Colin Maguire's taking a screen grab of Kiradesh Abhi Barnrat looking very disconsolate on the TV at +3 and simply says, the At Malloy Joe effect. Just gave him one tip on a swing plane.
Yeah. Do you think that's ever so slightly off?
Kiri, just one thought for you on your swing. Matt Pinn, getting stuck into this, again, the Tiger Woods book, on my honeymoon. Everybody's reading the Tiger Woods book on their honeymoon. I just don't know if it would set you up for marriage.
I think it's a perfect honeymoon book because it's one of the few golf books you can talk about with your partner.
Well,
and go, you'll never be... Wait, you hear this!
Matt Pinn says, even the wifey is letting me talk to her about it and showing an interest, and she doesn't even like golf.
Well, it's something you can dip into and dip back out of.
It's a human interest story, the Tiger Woods thing. God, stop it. Stop now.
That had to be said.
Ah, stop it. Sorry. Andrew White says, early days I know. This tweet hasn't aged well for you, Nathan. Early days I know, but after your interview with Padraig Carrington, I couldn't help but follow up on that 66-1 shot. Great odds, by the way.
Sorry about that.
Bookies are never wrong.
Well, when he was 4 under par and 1 shot off the lead on Thursday night.
It looked great different. Then. But I mean,
Thursday night.
Yes.
Yeah. If ever a man was liable to destroy his good work, unfortunately, it is Great Porrick.
Yeah, Friday was a... We didn't really touch on it, I don't think, as to just how shambolic it ended up getting for Harrington. He ended up losing a ball, found it 3 seconds after the 5 minutes allowed.
Oh, yeah.
And was forced on to go 13. Back to the tee.
Yeah. So it just shows how closely they adhere to that shot clock. Who starts the clock then? It must be a tour official.
The referee, I would have thought.
Is the player obligated to actually...
Well, so the question is always, does it start when you start looking? When does the 5 minute time start?
I don't know the answer to that. Because what if you tee off first? You can't start the clock then if you've playing partners.
So it's when you start looking.
And how do you define looking? When we're talking
now
about
I'm just admiring
3 seconds.
When we're talking about 3 seconds,
I think
I mean,
that's farcical, quite frankly.
I think that's outrageous as well.
I mean, if you're talking about penalising somebody by 3 seconds, but you have groups that are two holes behind, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
But presumably, and I didn't see how it finished out, and I don't remember Harrington talking about it afterwards, that they had agreed that the ball hadn't been found, had started to walk back,
maybe.
And 3 seconds later, rather than...
Five.
He goes, I have four. It. And I go, oh, 3 seconds too late.
One. Lee Jansen won a US Open and the same thing happened. The ball fell out of the tree.
Is that right, Chair? So that would be the more reasonable situation that you've described, whereby they all just go, right, sod it, we'll move on.
And then someone goes, oh!
Yeah.
No, if you've called it lost, that's a different
it's gone.
Kettle of fish.
Yeah, okay.
And then he double bogeyed 18.
When he really should have just made sure
It seemed like he was a bit too aggressive on 18.
Yeah, yeah, no, that was a pity. Andy Mackey, finally then, do you think Phil Mickelson's self-assessed two-shot penalty was deliberate to get everyone talking about something positive and something other than his moment of insanity, hashtag friend of the pod? It did occur to me, now you're a stickler for the rules, Phil. If you didn't see that, Mickelson on the Sunday at the military tribute, bloody hell, the golf military thing is out of control, at the Greenbrier in West Virginia. So on his way to the tee, par three, I think it was, maybe may not have been, but he stood down some grass in front of the 7th tee and then called a two-stroke penalty on himself for improving his line of play. Now, really, the whole tee box, he could have just moved his ball anywhere along the tee box line, but he just pushed down the grass. And they did say to his playing partner, have I broken a rule? I think I might have, but he wasn't sure. And so, look, he was 13 shots off the lead going into the tournament anyway, Sunday, so it didn't count for much. But I did think to myself, this is an example of Phil being the smartest boy in the class again.
Mm.
He's actually gone for one of the more obscure rules that even his playing partner didn't know, just to show, when it comes to the rules of golf, I love them.
If Fionn Davenport was here, he would go full-scale Fionn cynical on this.
I'm trying
and
to play
I'd be
cynical
inclined
to agree. All right.
Most definitely.
You think he orchestrated that whole thing?
I don't think he orchestrated, but I think an opportunity presented itself for Phil to turn the conversation into, well, that was a one-off, but generally we all know Phil. We all know Phil is a proper true pro.
Yeah.
He understands the morals of this game better
than
anybody.
He's a golfing man.
But he was broken down by that horrid USGA.
Embarrassed, he said, yeah. I wonder. You were saying you were reading a recent interview with Phil and Alan Shipnuck.
Yeah, do you want it now? There's a lot of good stuff in it.
Is there? I don't think we'll come back to Phil.
Okay.
Because we're going to do Irish Open. So give us Phil.
Shipnuck and Phil seem to have a great relationship in that Phil's apology after at the US Open, Shipnuck was one of the people, obviously, who was texted to put out there that he was very sorry about this. It starts, they're meeting in at Rancho Santa Fe, hilltop hamlet, half hour north of San Diego, a Sunsplash Mabry for the 1%.
Do we know when this was?
This was, not since the US Open, I don't think.
Pre-US Open.
I think it may have been pre-US Open. They meet for a coffee.
By the way, we're all in the 1%.
What? Well, it depends of... We're in the 1% worldwide.
Yeah.
Phil is in the 1% of the 1%.
No, I appreciate that. But I think for all our mental health, we should just acknowledge for a second, we are all in the 1%. Conor Deegan brought in free cupcakes That's our life at the moment.
Wow.
I bought them. I went free.
I spent the week walking. For us.
Yes, exactly.
Walking inside the ropes at the you need Irish
that.
Open.
You need
life is tough for us. So they meet for a coffee where Phil obviously knows the barista very well. His order.
Oh, yes.
Go for coffee.
He loves his coffee.
5 shots of espresso are poured into the concoction that Phil has already brewed a mile away.
See, the thing with Phil is, Connor, before you roll your eyes, did you ever hear the brilliant Phil Alan Shipnock podcast?
No.
I'll send you the link to it. It's fantastic. You know the way he has the arthritis in his hands? One of the things, actually, which they recommended was a lot of caffeine. So in the last couple of years, he's become, I mean, a coffee guzzler, an obscene amount.
Right.
And he's also probably that type A personality where if he does anything, he doesn't do by half. So instead of just going to Starbucks, he brews his own mad stuff in all sorts of incredible ways. I was talking to someone who hosted him over here in Ireland a while back. You know, he's a KPMG kind of thing. Mm. And they said he was great, he was brilliant, put on a clinic for everybody. The one request, though, was the coffee was, it was very specific in terms of what he wanted. And it had to be, there had to be lots of
blue M&Ms.
Yeah, but in the world of coffee. Sorry, I've interrupted. 5 shots of espresso.
5 shots of espresso. But he's already brought something with him to add to the 5 shots of espresso, which consists of coarse ground Ethiopian Yirgacheffe coffee. Apologies if I'm mispronouncing. Almond milk, cinnamon, cocoa nibs, collagen, and medium chain triglyceride oil.
Wow.
Which is extracted from coconuts.
Ugh.
At my age, says Phil, it's all about recovery.
Oh my God.
Got up at 5:30 this morning to hit the gym and followed that with an hour and a half of short game work.
Really?
Yes.
Phil's still grinding.
So he's still out there. He's still trying to work hard. I also didn't know Phil owns a black belt in Taekwondo, which he only started out on when he turned 40.
That's impressive.
That is bloody impressive, isn't it?
Yeah.
He talks about his aspirations, thinks he can still get to 50 victories. He's on 43 at the moment. Doesn't feel that time is going to slow him down.
I wonder. That's...
Oof. 7 more.
Yeah, 7's
a lot. I do still think he will win a major older than anybody else has previously won a major, which he must be hitting probably next year would push him. Is it Julius Boros? Is the oldest at 48? It's
good
very
knowledge.
I think it'll be Phil's thing. Maybe win a major at 50.
Was 46, yeah.
So, it talks about Tiger because this comes in the wake
of the $10 million.
The $10 million.
Yeah.
So, he's chatting about Tiger and Tiger's return and their relationship now. Says that when Tiger had the chipping yips in 2015, that he reached out and offered help. A gesture of deep empathy, says Shipnuck. I wonder how Tiger took that phone call. He talks about the trash talking with Tiger.
Did Shipnuck ask him that?
Shipnuck asked him
how Tiger took the phone call. I'd be very curious too.
Mm.
Second word would be off.
I just wonder, would it have been seen? Could it have been interpreted as like almost kicking me when I'm down?
Yep.
I don't need your pity.
Well, there's a whether it's true or not, I don't know. But there was a story.
Well, that's always a good start for a broadcast.
Let's go with it. Go with it.
We're not in the pub here. We're not walking down the 10th. We're on...
It does say throughout 2016 then, they maintained a steady correspondence while exchanging ideas about that year's Ryder Cup.
Who have you heard this from?
There was a story.
Oh, my God.
They...
This is not how the media works.
The people.
The people. The great unwashed.
Yeah.
The story was that back in the day, Woods wanted...
Beep!
Back in the day, a certain gentleman wanted some help with his chipping.
Watch your mic there.
He wanted some help with his chipping. And a certain other gentleman wouldn't help.
Phil. Oh, actually, is this about...
And they played off.
Is this about the fact that...
they played 9 up and downs.
What's your man's name? Phil's coach.
Butch.
No, his short game coach. Pelts.
Dave Pelts.
Wasn't the word that Phil had hired Pelts exclusively?
Mm. Saw the Tiger.
And the only reason he hired him exclusively, there was one person he didn't want Pelts working with. Mm. And that was the reason.
It's fair enough.
Yeah.
He's willing to pay for it. That's...
Yeah. I mean, well, he paid for it.
Yeah, he would.
Sorry, is this... So,
no, no,
just,
the story...
Just tell your story, because I'm losing track of who's who.
Well, okay, well, I'm going to say it.
Yeah.
Woods wanted... He was trying to get a little bit of help off Mickelson from a chipping point of view. Just sort of, golf's an unusual game where players help each other, and they always do. But this wasn't going to happen. So then it was a bet all of a sudden the stakes were put down. And I think it was 9 up and downs. And I think Mickelson beat him. And afterwards he says, thanks for the lesson.
Woods did?
Yeah.
Okay.
So he's still paid for it. Now that's...
As in, I've been watching what you've been doing kind of thing?
Correct, of course. They pick things up. Like Woods had a lesson with Ballesteros. And he came away saying, he said Ballesteros was just a genius. Mm. He watched him and he just absolute genius.
Interesting.
So it's amazing that, like, a boy like him could watch 3-4 shots and would pick it up very quickly, you know.
Their brains are operating on a different level.
Well, Phil talks about that in this interview, about his money game. So he's, on his weeks off, he's still playing money games 4 or 5 times a week with Tom Pernice and Brendan Steele and Charlie Hoffman. Now, maybe he's trying to change the talk around it, that it's getting too competitive and there's too much money at stake, saying that actually he finds he learns a lot. So Luke List drives the ball brilliantly, and when he's playing a money game against Luke List, he's watching what Luke List does and learning a little bit from him and Tom Pernice's short game, and there's more to it than just the money. He talks about the...
There is an argument on those money games, though, that it's one of the few ways they can replicate pleasure. Mm. You know, Tiger's quip about the $10 million game, this exhibition match they're playing, was, well, Tiger, how much are you playing for? And he said, whatever makes him uncomfortable. And it's one of the few ways they can probably put themselves in something approaching the pressure they might feel at the back nine in a major.
Well, if you're about to lose 200 grand on a Tuesday morning,
yeah,
and you've got to go home and say, how did that go?
Yeah.
Well, move out of the house.
Yeah, you know that new house we were going to buy?
Yeah, so that means you're up and down on the 17th is real, as opposed to, can you imagine how good these guys are in practice with no pressure?
Or is there a case, and I think this was one of the arguments been thrown out against the Tuesday games ahead of tournaments, was that it was destroying younger players' confidence. That actually you can win a golf tournament in a million different ways. You get in at 12 under and the guy in 15 under crashes out in the last 5 holes. Whereas mentally they're so scarred going into the tournament and worried, and there's so much stress having lost so much money on the Tuesday that it was harming their career.
And are we talking $200,000?
I don't know.
You were guessing here.
No, I'm wondering if it will get to that level. I'm sure his games with Tom Pernice on a Tuesday afternoon are not for 200 grand. But maybe if there's a bit of trash talking and there's so much money on the PGA Tour and some guy wants to get in on Tuesday, and the surefire way to get in, I'd say, on a Tuesday is to go up to Phil the week before and go, ah, old guy, you've lost it.
Yeah. Anything else in this interview? I'll read any interview.
He doesn't do too much trash talking with Tiger, because he says ultimately Tiger comes back with 14 majors, 79 wins, how many Player of the Year awards, all that kind of stuff. Shipman of Golf, you know the shirt? The first time he wore that shirt was the first practice session with Tiger at the Masters. Mm. That was all thought out, that he wanted to debut this to the world, and thought, what better way to do it than making sure Tiger is alongside him. Has a pop at Brandel Chamblee.
Yes, now we're talking, let's go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Chamblee's going to pop right back.
Which starts from, he goes to the cinema a lot, Phil. Didn't like La La Land. And Brandel Chamblee had taken to Twitter to offer a passionate testimonial about La La Land. Phil says, oh, that makes perfect sense. I was afraid you were going to say we felt the same way about something. That would have thrown me for a loop. I ask if he and Brandel have some history I don't know about. I just like people who build up the game, Phil says. I view this as we're all in this game of golf together. We all want to grow the game. We all want to make it better. I feel as if he's made his commentating career on denigrating others, and I don't care for that. I like people who helped build the sport up and promote it for what it is, rather than tearing down and ridiculing others.
See, Chamblee talks up loads of players. He's unbelievably complimentary of players.
That's his job, is to analyse.
Honest opinion. Like, the great time Chamblee really went to 10 on Phil, from memory, and I'm only talking from memory here, it's worth double-checking, but post the Tom Watson press conference at Glen Eagles, or around that time, Chamblee quite rightly made the point that, well, you know, Phil's all Mr. Captain America, but he changed his equipment on the eve of a Ryder Cup.
Correct.
A few Ryder Cups before that. Right. And, like, stunk the joint out and did, you know, just put money and commercialism ahead of Team America.
That's where him and Woods were paired together.
Yeah, so that was that Brookline?
And he nearly knocked it out of bounds.
Or was it Oakmont?
Up 18, wasn't it? He did. He carved one way left.
Yeah. It was on American soil anyway, and Phil changed his clubs on the eve. And Chamblee threw this back at him, and that didn't go down great.
But Phil has gone through his life been Mr. Popular. Everybody loves him. So when you're one of the few, everybody publicly loves Phil, and everybody talks about who he is, so good for the game, and the type of personality that attracts people in.
He loves the fans, Nathan.
Signs autographs for hours on end, so that he has to deal with criticism so
rarely.
That's
just to cleanse his soul.
He doesn't know how to.
Mm. No, the sign of the autographs. That's him cleansing his soul.
Okay, you don't like him. I like him. I find him fascinating. I love his interviews. I think he's got a brilliant mind. Can we agree on nothing else, but can we agree that he is bloody great to watch when he's playing golf? And that a tournament with Phil in the mix is infinitely better because of the way he plays the game.
Yeah.
Grant.
We can agree on that, and that he is probably the most interesting personality in golf. Whether you like his personality or not, he's got so many brilliant quirks.
Yeah, I think Woods is more fascinating. I'd love a psychologist to delve deep into Woods and explain.
Yeah.
So that's never going to happen. But in terms of like quotes and thoughts and the way his mind works and a million different things, and I know it grates on players that feel such a know-it-all, but he's bloody interesting in an interview.
He's like a more arrogant version of Harrington, full of opinions. But whereas Harrington, I think, is open to listening from time to time.
And Harrington's conscious that he gets a platform to give these opinions because he hits a white ball around the field. Mickelson, I think, thinks it's because my opinions are so bloody
correct. The last one, actually, part of it was interesting, I thought, where they go back to his house then and look at his practice setup in the house, which you can imagine has the usual professional golfer backyard, greens of various grasses, bunkers, different kind of sand, artificial putting surfaces, all that sort of stuff. It was a good one, actually, Phil. So Phil hits the ball directly over a stone cottage that serves as his staff office into an open field beyond. I ask if he's ever caught one really thin and doinked the cottage. He looks at me like I've three heads. Hall of Famers don't do that kind of stuff. So they step onto the artificial greens. Phil notes that one is set at 2 degrees of pitch, the next at 3 degrees, and the third green at 4 degrees. Each of the greens then encircled by balls, Phil's working his way around. Finds then that when he's in tournament play, because everything is within 1 degree, he can work out from those 3 greens pretty much every putt on tour. He works it back to those 3 degrees.
Right.
Wow.
I would think he practices incredibly smartly and thoughtfully. Actually, maybe.
Well, his longevity is incredible. He's 48 years of age now. He is. And he doesn't have the best swing. He's not the greatest driver. Yes, he's very spectacular to watch when he's playing well. His up and downs can be off the scale. His putting can be ropey at times. He misses short putts. So, but he is. Look, he's a hell of a golfer. There's no doubt about that. But Jesus, I find him hard work.
Well, Shipnock makes the point. I always thought of Phil's short game as pure art. Who knew there was so much science involved as well? Because what he does then is gets the green reading book, looks at the pitch of each of those putting surfaces, and then they work it out compared to what he has at home.
You know what I would love to see? I hate all this crap with these books. These are the best players in the world. They've caddies, the yardage, everything. I would love them to go out in one tournament and they're given approximate yardages to see how they can play golf. Rather than having everything dialed into the absolute yard, go back to how they used to play with a bit more feeling, a bit more thought, and a bit more speed.
Because you think they'd struggle, or because you
think
they'd
be interesting?
No,
I think they'd be brilliant.
Oh, do you?
I do. I think they would actually hit better. It would free up their mind an awful lot. Instead of all this, which I get and I understand, but I just think at times it's so analytical.
I watched him, and we'll get on to the Scottish Open now and talk a bit about the Irish Open, but you've reminded me, I watched Ricky Fowler been interviewed on the range for Sky Sports yesterday at the Scottish Open, and they were asking why he likes links so much, because his game has obviously done very well at links. Yeah. And he was saying, the conditions get me out of my mind. So I'm visualising shots, or like there's a wind which I'm either riding or I'm using as a wall and playing the ball into. And so I'm not in my head over the ball. I'm actually feeling the conditions or visualising the shot.
He's having actual fun here. He's taking himself out of that you know, boring by the numbers and saying, right, well, and they're hitting, you know, all of a sudden they've 190 yards. They might be hitting a 9-iron, 8-iron. I need to land this 40 yards short and let it run on. It just brings that feel and their juices get going again. Yeah.
He says that it's much easier than playing target golf in no wind when it becomes very number-based and technique-based in your head.
Well, really, when you get it to that point where it is target-based, I think a huge amount of the skill factors really go. It's about, boys, you can stand up, rip it now. That's what they're talking. Just rip it as far as you can.
It's driving range golf.
Take the wedges, rip them out of it's easier to hit a wedge out of the rough than it is to hit a 5-iron off a fairway.
Mm.
So, you know, go back to basics. Take it, the caddies, there's a sprinkler. You're now, there's 150 yards to the front of the green. The green's 30 yards long, the pin's 10 yards in. You know, you work that out quite quickly. All of a sudden, you're not standing looking.
Yeah.
I just would like to see that.
Just before we leave,
yes,
Phil, we haven't actually spoken about Tiger v. Phil, $10 million.
Oh, yeah. We're still in the tweets section of this podcast, believe
me. Oh, are we?
Yeah, because Phil, we went there via Phil. So let's wrap up the tweets with this.
Well, they still don't have a definite date. They thought it was going to be on July 3rd in Vegas, primetime special, Tiger against Phil, $10 million, winner takes all, 18-hole death match.
Do they put any of their own money?
This is what I haven't been able to find out. I presume not.
So. Otherwise, it's a shot to nothing. There's
exactly.
A lot less pressure.
You're literally just going to win $10 million.
Yeah, I really do think they should put in at least $2 million.
So instead of spending Tuesday at home, you're doing a 4TV event.
These are two boys. And as somebody said, you saying about Woods, it's something that has to hurt.
Uncomfortable.
They should be putting $10 million. They have the money. So if they have the balls to step up and do it, Mickelson's a big gambler. I'm sure he, you know, Woods allegedly is a big gambler.
One of them needs to call the other one out and say, hey, let's put in our own money.
Yeah. So I'll tell you what, let's do, and this isn't going to happen, let's do a great thing here. Let's get all that big sponsorship money on board. Let's give it all to charity.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll split it between our foundations. But I'm putting in $5 million and you're putting in $5 million.
It doesn't, and you know what, if they're actually putting in their own money, then
no, it's a game.
Million each makes them uncomfortable. You know, it doesn't have to be for $10 million. Like, $10 million of not their money.
Well, they don't play for $10 million. You put $1 million on the
table
and we're playing for $1 million.
A $2 million game, but it's their own millions.
Mm. I'd watch that.
But
that would be good.
A $10 million game where it's KPMG's money Nike's money.
Who cares?
It's a corporate event.
Yeah, it really is. So I think we need to start the campaign for them to put in their own money, even if it's $500,000 each.
Starts here. Get tweeting them. we'll still watch, obviously, either way. But
oh, yeah, no, especially if they're mic'd up.
I want to see tears.
They are your tweets. They are your tweets via Phil Mickelson Tangent. So the Irish Open, Russell Knox versus Ryan Fox down the back nine. Obviously, Erik van Rooyen was the leader. That last 2 hours was very dramatic. It tipped and frayed and swerved all sorts of ways. And there were different leaders. And then there was a two-shot gap. And then it was back to 4-5 tied for the lead. And in the end, it really did look like Ryan Fox was going to win regulation. Mm. But for Russell Knox holding a 40-footer. Mm. And bloody hell, doing the same thing again in the playoff. I mean, apparently Knox turned to his caddy when they got up in the playoff hole and said, well, we've held this one already. Let's do it again. He's a very smiley chap. I saw him around a lot. He's a nice fella, actually. You can tell. He's very smiley, very friendly fella. So I was happy to see him win.
He was on another podcast, Joe, last week, ahead of the Irish Open. He'd just played the French Open.
An inferior one.
Clearly.
Goes without saying, Connor.
Clearly. And I listened to it and I thought, this guy's saying all the right things. Mm. So he was playing 4 weeks in a row. He's one of the few who was playing French, Irish, Scottish and the Open, and was just loving being back in this part of the world, loving playing Lynx golf again, even though he is sort of the Scottish version of McDowell, has spent a good chunk of his life in America, has developed the accent and all that.
He has, yeah.
Like McDowell, he spent the first 15, 16 years of his life playing Lynx golf, played all the great Scottish courses. So he seemed to feel very comfortable, got straight on a flight after the French Open, was in Dublin, I think, on the Sunday night, took the Monday off, wandered around Ireland, nice. Took his time getting up there, and has obviously made a conscious decision to come back and try and force his way in to the Ryder Cup side, because he could have been in it last time. He won the World Golf Championship.
He was bypassed.
He won twice that year. Mm. He won the World Golf Championship in the November wraparound season, so it counts. And then he won on the PGA Tour, I think, in as late as July, August.
He was pushing hard to get it.
Yeah. So he won twice on tour.
But the World Golf Championship didn't count.
Yeah, but I mean, it still happened. Mm. He should have been picked.
He should have been picked.
Well, he was the next guy.
Ah.
Yeah.
He should have been picked.
In hindsight, he should have been picked, yeah. So he was in the world's top 20 at that stage. Mm. He'd fallen down to 89th or 87th. Currently, he went into the Irish Open at 87 in the world. This win brings him back inside the world top 50. Still quite a few ranking points for this tournament. So he's now 49th in the world and, I guess, back trending in the right direction. I think if we've had McIlroy winning in 16, John Rahm in 17, Russell Knox as the winner in 2018, I think that's a name that will age very well as a former winner of this tournament, with due respect to Ryan Fox or Erik van Rooyen. Mm. You still want marquee names winning this tournament, don't you?
Yeah, any tournament. I mean, I'm sure that all the corporate guys, the sponsors, they like to have a good winner.
Yeah.
If you want to talk that way, I suppose. Yeah.
And he seemed like a very good winner. I don't know if you see many of the videos from afterwards where he went into the members' bar and they're all up singing and, like, really.
The Knox is on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really got involved. Yeah. Whereas quite often, I think even John Rahm, and listen, they've no choice, they have to get in a plane. Last year in the piss and rain up in Port Stewart, it was go in, meet the members, thank you very much, thank you very much, get the hell out of there on a plane as quick as you can. So
John Rahm in Port Stewart, a friend of mine's sister is the general manager of Port Stewart. Judith Hutton's her name. And Joan Rahm, she received a handwritten letter from Rahm.
Oh, it's, there's a letter up in the clubhouse, framed. It's typed, though.
No, I've seen it.
You got a handwritten letter as well. I was written a few letters then. Very nice, nice. He was a joy all week. He grinded on Friday. On Friday, I followed him for a good few holes, and he could have, if he wanted, got out of there. He was on the cut line. He really could have said, you know what, let's take some time, and we've got the Open on the way, let's get out of here. He worked his ass off to get back in contention on the Friday, made the cut. And then on Sunday, when you have a triple bogey in your second, how would Rory have reacted to that? Not to bring everything back to slamming Rory McIlroy, but Rahm took that triple bogey, and bloody hell, he almost chipped in on 18 to win the thing. Or to go to a playoff.
Would Rory have taken it that the pressure was off and he could go and play whatever golf he wanted because he didn't think he was going to win the tournament?
I don't know. Maybe he would have. Maybe he would have. But
Rahm's going to win the Open.
Rahm grinded his ass off. I think he's just fantastic. I really do think he could. I mean, I hope he wins a lot of majors. I really
2 years ago, he was a college player.
Yeah, he really could win lots of majors.
I think he's brilliant.
I still don't get how people can be critical of his attitude on the course.
That's the
fiery. Oh, he needs to stamp that out. No, he doesn't.
Honestly,
we need more people who express themselves.
Be human beings. That is golf commentators who don't have much to say for themselves. That is what that is. They've nothing to say for themselves, and so they go with that standard. Oh, it's not nice to see, is it?
No, it's not. But you know what? It is good to see it. It's good to see a boy put his heart in his sleeve, and if he hits a bad shot, let people know that. You know,
he's great with
how good is he going to be at the Ryder Cup?
Oh, I know. I was thinking that a few times. This lad at the Ryder Cup is going to be a star. He talks very loudly in his round, so everybody is involved and can hear. So, like, he's walking off the green with his caddy. It's like, I really thought I had that one, man. I mean, I thought I had that one. And everybody watching is like, he thought he had that one.
Yeah, but they're now involved.
That's what I mean.
They're actually really involved. It's good. Insight, okay,
my favourite piece of on-course commentary came from Graham McDowell. We'll have to bleep this out, I think.
Will we? Who,
he was playing with...
I'm going to forget to bleep
John Rahm and Rafa Cabrera-Bejo. For the first two rounds, and on the sixth hole, the two of them went for the green, came up just left and short, par four, sort of drivable for those guys. McDowell decided to lay up into this massive hollow full of crap, and he walks up, he's like, that's the worst fucking layup anyone's ever hit in the fucking history of fucking layups.
I think you will have to bleep that in Furnace Show. Yeah.
In a public environment.
It was very honest.
I tell you what, actually.
Now they all ended up powering the hole.
You've jogged my mind. Saturday, Darren Clark was on the range at about 7:30, 8:00. Again, lots of eyewitnesses, very much in the public sphere. And it was actually sad. He couldn't hit the driver. I mean, it was going left. Then it was going right. Some of his shots to the right were, by pro standards, complete slices, and by amateur standards, definitely tailing off a good bit to the right, and then he hit some left. And at one point, he got the driver and just quietly put it in the ground, the head of it in the ground, and just leaned down on the handle, leaned down, and it was bending quite severely. And in the end, he thought better of it. And then he got the guy who was with him, who looked to me like he was just trying not to do anything to provoke
Dave McIntyre.
I mean, he was just putting the balls very calmly on the tee and getting out of the way. He got him to video a swing. He had a look at it, you know, zooming in, watching it again, phone back to your man, driver out again, and no massive improvement having looked at that. And I'm sure he's conscious of Carnoustie in a few weeks and not making a fool of him. Oh, that's a bit harsh. You know,
he finished on 3 over par.
Yeah, it was 6 over. He had three over both days. Which is not terrible. And if he does that at Carnoustie, fine. But I would say he's also looking at the Champions Tour and realises that, look, when you go on there, you got to win soon because you age exponentially when you get into your 50s, probably. The difference between a 50-year-old and a 55-year-old is a lot more than a 25-year-old and a 30-year-old, where there's no real difference. So I would think he's thinking it's a real chance now to make big, big money for the next 2 years to really set himself up for the home straight. But yeah, it was just, Fionn was watching it as well, and Fionn was there for longer than I was, and he was like, it's not often you see this.
Well, I think that also puts in context just how well Mickelson has done. The same age, 48, I think.
And still have the desire to be up at 5:30 going to the gym.
It made me really warm to Clark in a way. I was thinking,
well, same here, because we had touched, I think, on Tuesday, when I arrived on Tuesday at 1:00, he was the first person I saw on the range. and he was still there at 6 o'clock.
Shows you how bad the golf was.
But he was still there at 6 o'clock on the Tuesday, and I couldn't figure out whether it was he had decided to really throw himself into this week, or was he trying to find something? And it seems by listening to that, that actually he was just really searching, 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 searching.
Probably not playing much golf.
He must have used 50 different clubs.
Yeah.
They were constantly coming out with another 10 clubs. And that probably is. I'd be interested to hear from him after Carnoustie. And he's going to the Challenge Tour pretty much straight away then in August. He's going to play, on the Champions Tour from August on. I do wonder how much golf he has been playing. Like, yeah. It could well have been he got to Ballyliffin and thought, I haven't hit a club in six weeks.
Interesting to know.
Well, if you're bringing that number of clubs, I mean, he's struggling.
And you got to be sharp on the Champions Tour as well. Like, that is birdie golf. You got to put up a big score.
It's great. It's three rounds, I think, only in many ways. But it's very competitive.
Yeah.
And, you know, you wouldn't want
to... What's the insight, Diego? You're a man of his vintage. We wouldn't know.
It's like being old. Okay. You should smack
it. Well, no, it's very simple.
I thought you were going to play at the Champions Tour.
No, it's very, very simple. But when you have some sort of ability, it helps.
Ouch. That was just mean.
Wow.
Hey!
Wow.
Any other points,
Suck
then?
Suck it up, boys. Put on your big boy pants.
Any other points from the Irish Open before we talk about some of the Irish players? So, good for Knox to win. He's a good winner. It was an exciting finale. It did feel like a touch of a damp squibber on Saturday. Mm. The rain was coming down. The leaderboard, frankly, was unappetizing for non-golfing fans. Like, there's a few points to make. They had six players in the world's top 50. You know, five after Rory, which isn't great. They had like 13 or 14 of the world's top 50 for Royal Canadian. There's a few things
working. They only had one if you go back 10 years ago. If you go back to last time it was in Fota, it was...
We're being greedy. It's improved massively.
Montgomery and everybody else, basically.
There's a few problems for it. 4th of July in the States doesn't help.
No.
You're just not... These guys are away so much, they're not going to tell their wives, I'm not coming home for the 4th. I'm going to play in Ireland. The French Open obviously had an added significance this year, which won't have next year. Like Justin Rose, I saw interviewed yesterday at the Scottish Open. He was saying before the Open, he flips it each year. He did the Irish Open last year, Scottish Open this year, so hopefully he does Irish Open next year. Ballyliffin wasn't the most accessible or famous of courses. La Hinch has a different mystique. And another thing which might help next year is that there's a new event on the PGA Tour next year, the 3M Open in Minneapolis, which won't have much pulling power. So it might just be for McGinley to find a way with the calendar to make sure they're home for the 4th of July. Mm. And that might tempt some Americans.
The big opportunity is, as McGinley's already touched on, they can invite them over to Ireland so you don't need to leave. You can stay here, play the Irish Open, take a week off. We will put on the week of your life for you and your family, and then you can get up to Portrush on the Monday. You're totally relaxed. You haven't had a long-haul flight. It's weeks since you had a long-haul flight.
Yeah.
And McGinley is the type who can pull that together.
And he's going to mirror Portrush setup.
Exactly. Well. You mirror a setup, so it's the perfect preparation. You've got Adair Manor down there. You've the pull of JP McManus, who knows how to put on that week. It's why the pulling power is there for the Invitational, for the Pro-Am.
Yeah.
It's all the families come, they're treated well. You do a sort of version of that.
Yes.
So it's a nice little holiday.
Yeah.
You don't have to overly think things.
Yeah, you can tie it all in. That's a good selling point.
Yeah.
The other problem, I think, when you do look at golf now is, who draws a crowd? So, yeah, you can sort of stockpile more names from the top 50. But unless you have... So they have one in McIlroy, guaranteed, who after Tiger is the second biggest draw for anywhere in the world. They had John Rahm this year. Maybe now he's not defending champion, he doesn't come back, though he does seem to love the Irish.
Yeah.
So hopefully that draws him back. You've got Spieth, you've got Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson. After that, you're...
Sergio's a bit of a draw.
Sergio, Ricky Fowler.
Ricky Fowler's Phil. A bit of a draw. Phil's a big draw.
So you've probably got 10 guys.
If you could get Phil to this thing. The tricky thing with
Phil
is
plays the Scottish.
Because of his sponsor situation, he always plays the Scottish. And I don't think at 49, Phil's going to play three in a row.
No. Mm.
But Phil would be fantastic. I think I would have Phil as the top three or four in the world as a draw, actually.
Yeah, Tiger, Rory, Phil.
Yeah, I pretty much still would. DJ, you might get. Like, DJ's played a lot of golf in Ireland as an amateur. Walker Cup.
Walker Cup, yeah.
And comes over with his mates.
Yeah.
Sergio generally comes over this week.
I think Justin Rose is a bit of a draw.
Yeah.
Who's the Ryder Cup team? What's the European Ryder Cup team?
Ryder Cup team will be Rose, Stenson.
Stenson would be a good name.
Would be a good name. All these are good names. I just don't think for your...
Yeah.
Who's the ones already in?
Who's definitely in? I'll get it for you here.
Tyrrell Hatton.
T- Tyrrell Hatton is the leading the rankings. Francesco.
Tommy Fleetwood has a bit of something
Molinari.
About Molinari. Not, but Molinari's not a draw. No one cares about Molinari.
But I think that's where there's the divide between all these people are draws for golf. Stenson is a draw for a golf fan.
Yeah.
For your average sports person, they go, I'm going to drive from Dublin because Henrik Stenson is there.
I think the biggest issue for the Irish Open, really, for me, it was Ballyliffin. Phenomenal golf course, fantastic golf course. And you're right, the aerial photos on the television were magnificent. Showed the whole peninsula up for what it is, stunning. But it didn't have an RCD, it didn't have a Royal County Down name, didn't have a Portrush.
Got more spectators than RCD.
Newcastle was a nightmare to get in and out of.
Yeah.
It really is.
I was talking to Dermot Leese. He was like, it doesn't really matter.
The hedge is going to be the same.
He was like, it doesn't really matter what the attendance is. Like, basically...
No, it doesn't really.
Basically, like, they... I think a tournament... Is it costs or generates 10 million?
Costs.
They generally make a million if ticket sales go very well.
So it's inconsequential,
What's the difference between a million and 800 grand?
Yeah, nothing.
It's inconsequential. The real value is, how does it look on TV?
No, it looked brilliant.
The real value for Fáilte Ireland throwing a lot of money into it. The other issue that obviously McGilley will have to deal with next year is tickets for the Open went on sale on Monday.
They're pushing them hard, aren't they?
Sold 20% of all tickets gone in the first day, which is a record.
That
if you are in Dublin and you're thinking, and the Open Championship is a whole different ballgame, as we know, from going to an Irish Open. You go to the range there and you do have Phil, Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth lined up beside each other.
Yeah.
It's guaranteed. You know what you're getting.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're selling tickets for the Irish Open, we're still not quite sure as to who's going to be there. But you'd have to think he's going to draw quite a few of them. You can change a few minds. The European Ryder Cup team, as it stands. So from the world points list, Tyrrell Hatton, Justin Rose, Tommy Fleetwood, Francesco Molinari. And then from the European points list, John Rahm, Alex Noren, Rory McIlroy, and Paul Casey. So among those who aren't there yet, he has four picks. You have Matt Fitzpatrick.
No, not in current form.
Sergio Garcia.
Yes.
Ian Poulter.
Maybe.
I think he's going to have to pick Poulter.
Maybe, yeah.
Just because he's done just enough.
He's won on the tour.
To turn it round.
Yeah. Matt Fitzpatrick can't hit a ball at the moment.
Russell Knox, Rafa Cabrera-Bejo, Henrik Stenson. Stenson definitely gets in.
Yeah. That's two. How many have we given there?
So we've given Sergio, Stenson are definites.
Yeah.
And Poulter would have to think is...
Okay, so we've won
there. Thereabouts. Then you're going down. Shane Lowry's there. Matt Wallace, Ross Fisher, Paul Dunn, Russell Knox. I guess we're at a stage of a season where if you win a Scottish Open or an Open Championship or the USPGA, you're in.
Okay, so that's the Irish Open then, and I think 2019 is bright. You'd trust McGinley to make a success of it. So, McIlroy, what's there left to say about Rory?
Can't putt.
He had 32 putts on the Thursday, 34 on the Friday. He had 30-odd on the Saturday. I didn't see his Sunday figures. One of our tweeters mentioned he kept missing left. What he said after that round was... There was a mixture of bad reads and also pulling them left, he thought. So, for instance, he did a bad one in 18. That was just a pull. But a number of them were just not great reads. And what he said leaving on Sunday, if you want to send the optimistic note, if you want to say, look, he put it well at the Arnold Palmer, the optimistic view of things he gave on Sunday night was, what I've learned over these last few days is I've been aiming slightly left. And it's going to be a few days and I'll figure that out. And that will have made this week worthwhile, if nothing else, to figure that out now as opposed to 3 days into an Open Championship.
And he's right. If that's all it is, Joe, that's grand.
However, the long view of history would suggest that's not all it is.
Correct.
And there is a deeper problem. But that was, if you're looking for the word from McIlroy's mouth, that is how he left things on Sunday. He's taking the early part of this week off. He's going to go to Wimbledon. He's in London. And then he's going to go back to Northern Ireland and practice ahead of Carnoustie.
Well, from simply being out watching him for probably even just 18, 20 holes over the 4 days, low and left, time and time again from 10, 12 feet. Gary Murphy in the Mirror is interesting on McIlroy's putting. I'll go along with a lot of what people are saying, but says, doesn't surprise me that Brad Faxon emailed him a video after the Irish Open, highlighting his poor body language after several missed putts, attitude crucial on the greens.
Which is what was said to him after the Masters in 2011.
Mm.
Precisely the same thing.
Maybe you just need the reminder. In terms of technique, his upper body alignment too far left. Can't release the putter from there. It's a setup issue.
Murphy's saying that.
Mm. His green reading is also atrocious, and the book he's using these days should be shredded.
You know what? Gary Murphy, yeah.
But didn't hold back. And also said, while Rory's long game is great, his course management is open to improvement. Why risk attacking every pin when a more measured approach might aid the flow of your round? That's where Rory's caddy should be more vocal.
Interesting. I joined him on the 8th on the Thursday. And there's two bunkers. That's the only defence that hole has. Yeah. It's a very easy hole. His two playing partners, Cabrera Bello and Fitzpatrick, took hybrids, laid up at both bunkers, and only had about 160 in, 150 in. McIlroy took driver, went into the far right bunker. Got it out of that bunker and got it onto the green, but he gained next to nothing. Mm. And so that struck me as a mix of just terrible course management and also an acknowledgement, even on the tee box, that with his putting, he needed to get this ball close to make birdie. So he wanted to leave himself next to nothing onto the green, effectively an up and down if he caught the bounce and ran on. So I think that's like the putting affecting some of his judgment. And then, look, I remember being in Killarney when Jay Townsend got into a massive row, public row with McIlroy, because he said his course management was like as bad as a schoolboy. So it's interesting. Like, if Gary Murphy is saying it, you can bank that as true. Like, Gary Murphy's a brilliant judge, I think.
Well, also, Gary was working for RTE and followed him around for, I'm pretty sure, the first three rounds. The technique side of it, the upper body alignment being too far left, may also explain the never-ending conversations himself and Harry Diamond had after every missed putt. And also the long conversations they seem to have before, because that was one of the question marks this time last week. Why isn't he spent talking more to Harry Diamond, who's seen as a good green reader? They actually did that.
Is Harry Diamond seen as a good green reader by the standards of winning the West of Ireland? Or is he seen as a good green reader by the standards of winning a major? And is there a difference? Is a good reader a good reader?
I think the greens in the West of Ireland are very, very different to a lot of the greens are putting on now. They wouldn't have the same pace. They would, you know, they're just not the same greens. I think you also have to have a certain amount of authority. You go back to Tiger Woods, Williams. I think there was one putt in particular, and it was from that moment forward that Woods believed and trusted in Williams. Woods, I think, read the putt, whatever it was, left or right, and Williams actually said, no, it's actually not.
Well, Adam Scott's final putt at the majors in 2013, I think. Mm. He read it different to Williams.
And Williams got it right.
And Williams said, trust me, I know this putt. It's a ball left. Please just do that. And like, God, that's a lot of trust.
That takes a huge amount.
That's the Masters on the line.
Yeah.
And like Scott, if he trusts Williams and misses, has to spend the rest of his life thinking, I knew better myself.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he trusted Williams.
Can you think about the balls Williams has to stand up and actually say, no, you know, we're talking about some of the great players.
It's a sackable offence.
Turn around and say, no, you go this way because that's the right putt.
So, like, I also heard Murphy, did he say it on the radio? This is the problem with the bloody being up there chatting to people.
But I just wondered.
It's not anything scary or bad. And I think, I can't remember if he said it. No, I better leave it. To be fair, it's nothing like outrageous or whatever. But it is around the issue of Diamond. Like, do we think that's sustainable long term? Is a question for all of us. And admittedly, Rory was having these problems before Harry Diamond came in the back.
But look, this is his job. He's a very, very talented fella.
Rory or Diamond?
McIlroy.
Yeah.
Very, very, very talented. Tiger Woods didn't go and take a mate and put him on his bag, which I'm sure he could have done. You go and get the best player or the best person that's available for you to help you.
That said, he was number one tee to green a couple of weeks ago. He's won on the Arnold Palmer, and he was still right up there tee to green. Like, his round on Thursday at the Irish Open was the fifth best round on the European Tour all year. I guarantee you, the other top 20 of the best 20 rounds in the European Tour, those players were leading after the end of those rounds. Mm. So it's, okay, I mentioned McIlroy into the bunker and strategy or whatever, but him and Diamond are still plotting their way around the course well enough, more than well enough for Rory to be winning these tournaments by a country mile.
That's telling you that the talent is unquestionable. We all know that.
But even the tee to green, they're still getting around beautifully, no? I know Gary Murphy's right about the strategy, but still the tee to green rounds are brilliant.
Yeah, but the biggest problem you have is the good is very, very good and the bad is atrocious.
Yeah.
There's no halfway house. For me, at the moment, he lacks the backbone, if you want to call it that, the moral strength, whatever you want to put it, to really grind out rounds. The one thing about Woods at his absolute peak, he ground on every single shot. Jack Nicklaus, the exact same. We're talking about the two greatest golfers of all time. Nicklaus, Woods, Woods, Nicklaus. They ground out. They had pride in finishing, not missing a cut. McIlroy at this stage seems to say, well, if I'm not going to win it, I don't want to be here. Well, now, when he's in flow and in form, he's rarely out of the top 10. You know, he's really, really, really good. But you cannot tell me he wouldn't be a better golfer. If he had Stevie Williams on his back, he would be a much better golfer.
Would having a personality like Williams piss him off, though? Because he is... McIlroy has surrounded...
That's the constant question.
He has surrounded himself with... Yes, with well, that's... I think that's probably a bit harsh, because I'm sure they're all capable. And yes man implies some kind of lack of moral backbone or whatever. But he's definitely in charge. Yeah, that is...
And there's nothing wrong with him. Woods was in charge. You know, Jack, they all would have been in charge. But they have to, maybe the feeling is in Rory McIlroy that he maybe, you have to have a little bit of humility. You have to have an understanding. This guy actually, he's good at what, he's basically saying, you don't know what you're doing, I'm doing it all. You know, he said to JP, you don't know what, it's me. You know, you look at the top and they worked as a partnership. They worked together. Woods and Fluff, but then Woods got Williams. They worked as a unit. You know, Jack Nicklaus, they all work with guys. And caddies have become much more important because of the yardage and all the crap that goes on along around that. But realistically, I think, for me, McIlroy needs to, you know, have a wee bit more humility about him, a little bit more humble, take a wee bit more advice, as in, yes, you're a brilliant golf striker, your best swing, for me, the best swing of all, but there's something missing. And it is. Is he a bad putter compared to us? No, he's a very good putter. But compared to the rest of his game, he's poor. And that's what we're, unfortunately for him, which everybody judges his putting. There's other guys out there who don't play from tee to green like him.
Sure.
But they make up with the putter.
Yeah. It's interesting what you say about the missed cuts, because, so his press conference on the Wednesday, there were a couple of interesting comments that aren't overly interesting, except it's Rory saying them. Mm. And he did say, sort of off the cuff, talking about another answer, going, listen, I miss cuts. You know, I miss cuts all the time. It's water off a duck's back at this stage. You just could never... ever imagine Tiger saying that, saying, "Ah, oh, listen, some weeks it happens, some weeks it doesn't." Mm. No, it always has to happen. And that goes back to the, oh, golf isn't the most important thing in my world, which in some ways it's fine to have that balance, but then you can't also think that greatness is going to come. Unfortunately, you have to sacrifice. Mm. And I wonder with Harry Diamond and with Michael Bannon, and particularly, I guess, Bannon, who is stuck so close to the whole way through, it's been the one thing that has never changed. Maybe he's been burnt badly over his professional career by some of the business dealings that have gone on, that he has a close-knit group that he really feels he can trust, that whatever's happened in his private life, whatever's happened everywhere, he can trust Harry Diamond with his life. And maybe he looks outside and thinks, I just don't know. I just don't know. I don't want my caddy to just be my caddy. I want someone who we're around a little bit more, we get on well.
And you know
it's
what?
Not
that's,
a business
that's
partnership.
Wonderful. And that's great. I don't. But at the end of the day, it's not going to be enough to win what he should be winning. That's the reality. We're talking about a guy.
But do you think he's accepted that? That's the one thing I thought maybe was, point. That maybe he's accepted. You know.
But his issues predate Harry Diamond.
I did indeed, absolutely.
No, I don't think this should be a Harry Diamond.
No, it's not a Harry Diamond beating session here. But they're the same issues. He's, you know, said... A friend of mine who's a pro, and he just said, you know what, maybe he's just not a good putter, relatively speaking. That happens. Mm. Some of the great ball strikers weren't great. You go back to Ben Hogue, they weren't great putters.
The betting at the moment for the Open Championship has Dustin Johnson 10-1 favourite. Rory McIlroy is second favourite, 12-1.
Just on what?
Jordan Spieth 14-1 and Ricky Fowler 16-1. Based on the fact that he's done pretty well in recent Opens, based on the fact he won the silver medal at Carnoustie 11 years ago.
Based on the fact that the weather is beautiful right now.
He's done very well at Opens in the last couple of years, actually. It's been his most consistent major.
Also based on the fact that he is striking the ball unbelievably well. As he said, 25 putts around and he wins every tournament by 10 shots.
And we can dismiss that at the moment because he's not always striking the ball amazingly. Like,
no, but the two things tie, Joe.
I know, but the good news is, tee to green at the moment, he is in a sweet spot.
No. If he starts putting well, the knock-on effect to the rest of his game will be huge.
Putting top 20.
If he's below 30 putts around, he'll win it.
Yeah,
he is. For me, I'm sick of saying it. I think he's brilliant swing.
So that's why he's 12-1 because that can happen.
But you're hoping.
Oh, we're hoping.
Whereas there's other guys.
I tell you what,
there.
If you were a bookie, and you were doing the odds, you'd have near enough to top again because it can happen anytime.
Yeah, that's true too. But, you know, look, he's 12 to 1, second favourite. There's other guys out there, I would say, probably.
No, I wouldn't touch him at 12s.
No. But look, yeah, it's a weakness in his game, and maybe that's just the way it is. Maybe he's come to terms with it. Maybe he's happy enough with it. I'm sure, you know, money isn't his issue now.
He's not happy at the time. Like, his body language on course after he misses them, and it continues off camera as well.
Well, then he's going to have to do something to change it.
Correct. But we've been saying this for a few years.
Yeah. I do. So, obviously, his body language isn't good in the course when he misses a few putts. Is that them resulting in him going to the putting green for 6 hours and going there till 1 in the morning going, I'm going to find this no matter what? Mm.
That is the question.
Or is it, tomorrow I'm sure it'll work out.
Yeah. The Scottish Open is on at the moment, and we have Ricky Fowler as the favourite. We have Justin Rose there at 10 to 1. Patrick Reed is there. He was brilliant on the Sky on the Range thing last night, actually, just talking about his hands and various technical things. Really good if you can track it down. Tyrrell Hatton's there, Matt Kuchar is there, Russell Knox obviously is there, Westhuizen. He's a fella who, if his back is anyway okay, he can just rock up and win a major. Ryan Fox is there after his Irish Open. Cabrera Bello is the defending champion. So I should just mention they're back at the Gullen course.
Yeah.
The last time there was 2015 when Ricky Fowler won.
He's tied for the lead.
He sounded very good talking yesterday. Loves that course. He's feeling good about life. So it was on Dundonald Links last year. Cabrera Bello, the defending champion. Castle Stewart in 2016. Alex Narron won. Fowler in 2015 at Galan. Justin Rose won this at Royal Aberdeen. We're talking about the winners of the Irish Open. These have Cabrera Bello, Narron, Ricky Fowler, Justin Rose, Phil Mickelson 2013 at Castle Stewart, and went on to win at Muirfield that year. Luke Donald won in 2011. So some impressive names at the Scottish Open. I think it's a great tournament to watch. The links looks great on TV.
It does. It lends itself. Look, it's fun. You know, it's a completely different game.
Yeah. Every Parkland course in Ireland right now plays as a links.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ian JP played Lucan the other day and we're bouncing shots on with a six iron from 200 yards. It's class.
Starting to feel good about yourself, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
we should give a mention as well that if you're up in Donegal,
oh, yeah,
if you're making the short trip up to Donegal anytime in the future, go to Northwest Golf Club in Buncrana. Have you played it?
No.
Do you know what?
Lovely
it was,
links.
It just played so great. Really did.
Was the weather nice?
Ah, listen, it was stunning.
Did you play okay?
We were all in the 30 pointers, yeah.
Okay. Even me.
It does help.
It helps.
It helps.
But it helps how you feel about
it. It was
course.
A fair challenge as well, though, you know.
But you enjoyed it.
Oh, sure I have to say, I enjoyed it more than the Pro-Am.
I've seen your chip in the Pro-Am.
Do you know what's interesting about that? I've been chipping great. I went to the Pell School.
Yeah.
And I played at Port Stewart the day before. Fantastic course, great. And played the Pro-Am and then played
Northwest.
I watched that chip back and straight away I saw what you saw.
Whoop.
Scoopy. Do you know what? I was just distracted that whole day. I wasn't thinking shots through. I really wasn't. Like, what I would do at Northwest or the day before Port Stewart was, well, like, keep, boom. You know, yeah, boom, yeah. Boom. And it was just amazing because Nathan and Johnny were there at that point. That was around the 9th green, I think, or the 18th.
Well, it's the 18th, but you're 9th.
Yeah, and loads of people there chatting. How are you? How's it going? People there. And honestly, I don't even think I did a routine. I think I just went...
Get it out of here quick.
And I was just like, just get this in the air. Yeah. And when you're thinking get it in the air, you scoop it.
Yeah, you do.
Actually, the Pro-Am thing, they changed the format. It used to be you just play your own ball, but it's a real... It was just a team thing. You take the best drive. So you've no idea. You scramble. You've no idea how you're actually scoring. And it's terrible to say it. My concentration levels dropped massively about 6-7 holes in. I was still playing. I was still doing my bit. But actually, it's different to saying, I'm going to see what I can score today.
Oh, it's completely a scramble. Look, I enjoy scramble because it's fun. And most people do. But really, it becomes like that.
So I reverted to what I was doing a year ago.
You just don't think. And you
reverted back to just scooping it and not thinking and all this kind of stuff.
But tell me more importantly, has the putting improved?
With your tip? Unbelievable.
I don't want to hear it. My putting was just fine.
Well, then listen. But Deegan's putting tip the last day. Did a few people get in touch with you?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, it's class.
Go on.
No, not talking to you.
Well, you explain it. But effectively, you're locking your wrist angle and just doing the shoulders, aren't you?
Yeah.
Make sure your left hand, it's all about the left hand. Make sure the left hand is around the back of the grip a wee bit more.
Yeah.
Okay. And you keep the left wrist like that. You keep it nice and straight. not kinked like this.
Okay.
So if you can do that and keep this all tucked in nice and just rock your shoulders, it becomes repeatable.
That's what I've been trying to do.
There you go.
No, but it's so simple.
All about the shoulders.
It's just, but when you do that...
Standing taller so I keep my wrist straight.
You see, but then that's an unnatural position. You got to get nice and relaxed.
Right. Now you've messed. He was feeling great about his pudding, and now he's going to feel like shit about it.
Great, isn't it?
Like, this is unnatural. This is unnatural.
It's natural for you, Nathan.
No, it's unnatural to stand way up rigid. You have to have a wee bit of play in it.
I think we're done here, are we?
McIlroy to win by 8 shots next week. It's going to happen.
Awesome. We'll preview the Open next week, I guess. We might try and do it on a Wednesday. Mm-hmm. We'll see how the week is shaping up. So yeah, Open next week. I mean,
yeah, I look forward to it. That's brilliant. I have to say, I love it.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. Brilliant. We've no competitions or anything we need to mention, do we? We're done. We still love Dubai Duty Free.
We've a golf day coming up very soon.
Oh, do we? Oh.
Yes, beginning of August.
Do we?
We do.
News to me. Go on.
Arlo Golf Club.
Right. Ooh,
very nice. Yes.
Yeah, we'll have full details next week.
Is this one that the listeners come to?
Yeah.
Just Golf Weekly.
Just Golf Weekly.
How haven't I heard about this?
Because I told you about it about a month ago, but you know, you got a lot going on, Joe.
So, okay, great.
We'll talk about it. August, have our production
August
meeting.
9th.
No, I think it's August 8th. It's the day before the PGA.
August 8th is a Wednesday.
Yes.
So, we're doing a Golf Weekly listeners thing at Carlo. Details to be announced.
You're invited.
I'm invited now, Joe.
I've never played Carlo.
Very nice.
But I've heard it's a beautiful spot.
Excellent. Brilliant. Great. Right.
You'll enjoy it.
On that note, we'll say goodbye, listeners. All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket town. Little J.D. Starter kid right here.